If I can have your attention, while you are finishing up your breakfast, we'll go ahead and get started with our program this morning. I'm Jonathan Wilson, president of the First Friday Breakfast Club, and I want to welcome you to another meeting of the First Friday Breakfast Club, an association of gay and bisexual men, and the largest private breakfast club in the state of Iowa. It has become a tradition to have those who are here for the first time introduce themselves or have their host introduce them. It's not a requirement, but if there are those who are here for the first time, like to stand up and give us your name, we would welcome that. Anyone? Yes.
I'm Edward Burke from Storm Lake. This is my first breakfast.
Welcome. Yes, sir.
Alan Braun, Western Wine.
Welcome. Others? There are some others who are here for the first time, I think. So for those of you who are regulars, if you'll look around and notice an unfamiliar face, make sure to welcome them. Encourage them to come back again. And if you look around and you think of someone that isn't here that might be interested in the Breakfast Club, let me know and I'll make sure to extend a personal invitation to them to participate. A number of announcements I want to bring to your attention. We have, of course, our book exchange in the foyer. It's a Lynn library. You're welcome to borrow the material that's there. There is no checkout system. You bring it back or you don't. And if you have any material that you'd be willing to share, we'll add it to the library. And thank my partner, Scott Cupio, for coordinating our book exchange. If you did not receive an RSVP reminder of this meeting, it's because I don't have an accurate email address for you. And if you'll get that to me, I'll make sure that in the future you get reminders of our meetings and you can RSVP easily by just hitting reply. I encourage you to visit our website, ffbciowa.org, and you will be able to find there an audio recording of our speakers so that if you miss a meeting, you can hear the speakers. And if you want to, you can hear the speaker again, depending on your particular interest. There is also in the foyer a new member ID form. If you want to fill that out with contact information, we'd be glad to invite whomever you suggest. Also in the foyer, there are some sample newsletters of our monthly newsletter, and there's a subscription form. So for those of you who are not paying on an extended basis, and getting the monthly newsletter as a result, you're able to subscribe to the monthly newsletter for $15 a year. And we have a number of other announcements I want to bring to your attention, but first, there's an important sort of surprise announcement that we have from Taylor Vanderpool. Taylor.
Yep.
There you are.
Hello, everyone. My name is Taylor Vanderpool. You guys must know me as Matt McCoy's right-hand man for the past 3 years. Unexpected circumstances, Chad Allen dropped out of the race. He's a state senator from Eastern Polk County and most of Jasper County. He dropped out of the race 2 weeks ago, and so there was a special convention last night to fill that vacancy, and I'm the Democratic nominee, and so... I'm going to need every single one of your help in this. candidates in this race. You guys are important to me. So if you could please contribute, it's greatly appreciated. I brought my boyfriend, Matthew. He is going to be my interim campaign manager. He's very smart. He's a very good photographer, videographer, and he's my social media guru from now on. So if you guys have any questions, if you guys haven't met me, I'm going to introduce myself. I'm openly gay. With departure of Senator McCoy, I will be the only openly gay legislator or senator if I get elected in November. So thank you in advance for all your support. If you have any questions, just direct them to me. My website is VandyCrawfordSenate.com, and we've also got a Facebook page, Vandy Crawford Senate. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Excellent. It would be great to have a replacement for Senator McCoy at the table. They say if you're not at the table, you're probably on the menu, and we could use a guardian in the Senate, I suspect. Okay, next announcement. Tomorrow, August the 4th, from 7:30 until 2:30 in the afternoon, is the 4th Annual LGBTQ Senior Summit. It's going to be at Grandview University Student Center, and it's $30 at the door, and that includes breakfast, at lunch, and snacks, so it's a real bargain. Next, the ACLU of Iowa is looking for a communications associate. If you're interested or know of someone who might be interested in such a position, you will want to contact Veronica Fowler, their communications director, and touch base with me. I can give you her contact information. Next Wednesday, the 8th, is our FFBC board meeting. It's going to be at Scott's and my home on the south side at 6:15. Members are certainly welcome. If you want to, let me know, and I'll give you easy directions for getting there. Also on Monday, there's going to be a Capital City leadership election. It's going to take place at the Wallace Building, which is that gold-looking building across the street from the state capitol. 6 o'clock is when the election is going to take place. Apparently, you can just walk in, vote, and leave. You know, it's not that you have to hang around. So if you are interested in that and want to participate in the selection of that leadership, that is the time and place. Next, our newsletter copy deadline is a week from Monday, August the 13th. So if you're a regular contributor, that's your copy deadline. If you are not a regular contributor, but you would like to contribute, you're welcome to do that. Just get your copy to me, and we'll make you look like a really brilliant writer. Just get us the ideas that you want to have expressed. Also, there's a survey that's being circulated seeking participants for a study of those not living in an urban setting who are on a PrEP program. It's kind of a niche survey, it seems to me, but if any of you are aware of anyone who does not live in Des Moines proper, lives out in the hinterland somewhere, and is on a PrEP program, I'll give them the information for participating in this particular study. Let's see. You have at your tables a list of activities planned and sponsored by Prime Timers of Central Iowa. There are lots of activities there, so there is no lack of something to do the rest of this month. On August the 18th, from 7 until 10, we're going to have the annual FFBC Pros Joint Sponsored Party at the home of Michael Thompson and Alan Vanderlinden, 7500 Benton. And this is the last scheduled party for Pros for this year. They're obviously always looking for venues, so if there's someone among you who would be interested in hosting that event that can be scheduled, you need to let Rick Davis know about it. Also at your tables, I have a condominium for rent. If anyone is interested or knows of someone who might be interested, the information and particulars about it are at your table. I got some advertising out on the web, and my first contact was by someone who wanted to know if I had a problem with renting to a former felon. The answer is yes. And with that, I will turn to Scott Cugno, who is going to introduce our speaker for this morning. Scott.
Good morning. Terry Caldwell Johnson has spent her entire career in public service. She was born in Salina, Kansas, and Terry has a BA in English from Spelman College in Atlanta, Georgia. She also has an MPA from the University of Kansas. In 1988, Terry was appointed Executive Director of the Metro Waste Authority in Des Moines. She served in that position until 1996, when she was appointed to the position of Polk County Manager, which is a position that she had held from 1996 to 2003. In April of 2004, Terry was appointed to the position of CEO for Oak Ridge Neighborhood and Oak Ridge Neighborhood Services. Terry was elected to the Des Moines School Board in 2006 and re-elected to a second, third, and fourth terms in 2009, 2013, and again in 2017. She is currently the chair of the Des Moines School Board and serves on the board of directors of the National Civic League, Mid-Iowa Health Foundation, Polk County Housing Trust Fund, Planned Parenthood of the Heartland, and the Directors Council. Terry is a recipient of numerous awards, including the Faith and Freedom Community Leader Award in 2018, the A. Arthur Davis Distinguished Community Leadership Award in 2017. She also was the recipient of the President's MLK Drum Major for Service Lifetime Volunteer Award in 2014. In addition, the Iowa African American Museum's 2010 History Maker, the Business Publications 2002 Women of Influence, the Black Ministerial Alliance 2002 Leadership Award, the Business Record Best Female Business Leader 2001, and the YWCA 1999 Women of Achievement. Terry is married to Vernon C. Johnson, who is a retired nonprofit executive, and they have two adult children, Bailey and Baxter. Welcome.
I told Scott he really didn't have to read all of that. But I do appreciate that generous introduction, and all of that is actually true, so I will definitely take credit for it. It's a pleasure to be here, and I'm going to start my timer so I can stay on time. I was thinking back to the last time I was before this group, and it's really interesting. My son was actually in elementary school. He is now 28 years old, so you guys need to invite me back more often. And it's interesting also because when Jonathan and I chatted about this opportunity, several months ago, he originally asked me if I was available in September. And I said yes, but depending upon the date, I may or may not be able to do it. And when he said it was the first Friday, I said, oh, I'm good, because I'm heading to Africa for the first time in my life. And I'm going to be there for 3 weeks with my college alumni, and I'm looking so forward to that. So then when he called me and said this was moved to August, I was said, even better, except today is my 33rd wedding anniversary. So I woke up this morning to my husband, and I said, see you, babe, later on. So Jonathan asked me to share a little bit about the Des Moines Public Schools, which I've been involved with now for about 12 years in my board capacity. When I actually finished my fourth term, which at this point I'm saying is my fourth and final term, I will have served 15 years on the Des Moines School Board. So if I haven't gotten it right in 15 years, I probably need to go somewhere and sit down and let somebody else take my seat. But I have certainly enjoyed that work. And as I was thinking about it, I've actually had the pleasure of working with two superintendents, Nancy Sebring. Many of you, I'm sure, remember Nancy. And then, of course, now Dr. Tom Ahart. But the other thing that I found really interesting as I was reflecting back on my time on the school board, I've actually served with 22 different members of that board in my short 12-year tenure. So we've had several individuals that have served multiple terms, several that have served only one term, but it's interesting because the dynamics of the board during my tenure have obviously changed substantially. And every time, of course, you introduce a new member to the group, you have to sort of reinvent your group dynamic and determine how you're going to proceed as a body. In my role as board chair over the course of the last 2 years, I've had the wonderful pleasure of working with three brand new members, and then we introduced our fourth last year. So that dynamic has really shifted during my 2 years as board chair. And it's been interesting because we've had an opportunity to do really some amazing things. The other thing that I'm going to share before I move into some comments that Jonathan and I chatted about a little bit as I was preparing for today is that we now have probably the most racially and ethnically diverse board in the history of Des Moines Public Schools. While the gender balance is a little off, we have 6 females and only 1 male, we actually now have 2 African Americans serving on the board, 2 Latinos serving on the board, 1 multi-ethnic individual serving on the board, and 2 Anglos on the board. So I think for the first time in the history of our district, we are really reflecting the demographics of the students that we serve, and I'm very, very proud to be seated at the table with such a diverse, enlightened, and committed group of individuals. The district has seen a lot of changes during the time that I have been on the board, and so today I'm going to speak from just 4 vantage points and try to cover them succinctly and quickly. I'm going to talk a little bit about our district demographics, and I was sharing with Jonathan from the time that he served on the board back in the 80s to now, we have changed demonstrably in terms of not only who we serve, but also how we serve those students. I want to talk about 2 current events that are impacting our district operations that I think will be of interest to the group. We have a few challenges, so I want to talk about just 3 or 4 of those. And then, of course, I'm going to end on some pride points because I always like to really boast about who we are as a district and what we do. So very quickly about our demographics, we're actually Iowa's largest school district. We have an enrollment of a little over 33,000 students. That's our certified enrollment as of October of 2017. So we'll have a new certified enrollment figure in October of this year. And that's actually the number that we turn into the state, which then determines the amount of state aid that we get. We get a little over $6,500 per student, and so that certified enrollment is really critical. The thing that's interesting, though, throughout the school year, we're always introducing new students into our district. And unfortunately, the way the state funding formula is established, while we introduce new students into the district throughout the year, we do not get funding for them until the following year. So the funding does follow, but it's a year lag. So we're oftentimes educating more students than we're actually getting dollars for. We are actually a majority minority district. About 39% of our students are Anglo or white. 26% are Hispanic, 19.4% African American, 8% Asian, and 6.5% multiracial. So we definitely are moving in the direction of serving a larger and larger number of minorities. Over 73% of our students qualify for free and reduced lunch, which means that those are children living in poverty, which oftentimes introduces a completely different set of challenges when it comes to educating. But we make sure that each and every student is fed. We've gone to a new platform where we actually, especially at the elementary level, do breakfast in the classroom. So we are actually doing instruction as students are eating their breakfast each and every morning. About 21% of the students that we educate are English language learners. And if you take just the English language learners in Des Moines Public Schools, we would actually be the 13th largest school district in the state of Iowa with just our English language learners alone. So that obviously is an interesting dynamic that challenges us each and every day. We have over 100 languages spoken in our district. So we obviously are in a position where we really have to morph our service delivery system to not only be culturally competent, but language specific in terms of how we deliver our services. We have a total of 64 buildings in the district. 38 of those are elementary schools, and we likely will have a new elementary school coming online here in the next couple of years to serve the eastern and southernmost portion of our district. We have 11 middle schools, 5 comprehensive high schools, and 10 special programs and or schools, which include Central Campus and Central Academy. We have a very diverse menu of offerings, and I think this is probably one of the single most significant things that really distinguishes Des Moines Public Schools in ways that you typically don't see in large school districts. We have 10 International Baccalaureate World Schools in our district. We have 5 turnaround art schools. We have a Montessori school, and we're actually introducing a new Montessori program in the eastern part of the district in another year. Of course, we have Central Academy, which is for advanced placement and really is a gem in our crown of service offerings in our district. And then we also have Central Campus, which is our career and technical program. So that's a little bit about our demographics and also a little bit about our infrastructure and who and how we serve. So let's talk about 2 very important current events that are impacting our operations. School safety, big one. Recently, with all of the school shootings that have been taking place across the country, school safety obviously has always been something that's been important to our district and probably all districts across the country. But really, it has heightened our awareness around what it is we need to do and how we can be responsive to the needs of our students and our staff who show up each and every day expecting to be taught in a safe environment and one that protects them. In our schools, we have 55 that have controlled entrances, which means that it's a single point of entry buzzer system. So in order to actually get into the building, you have to go to that single point of entry and then buzz to be let in. We also have 6 additional schools that will actually have new entrances or remodeled entrances effective the beginning of this school year. All schools have a visitor check-in protocol, and we've also, in each of the classrooms, installed intruder locks, which means that you can lock them from the inside so that no one can come in from the outside. So that's a protection for teachers to be able to be responsive to the extent that there is an all-call in their building. There are also a total of 1,037 security cameras placed in our buildings throughout the district. Those are monitored 24/7 by the district security staff. And we also have really stepped up our game. I did a little bit of digging into this because as we were beginning to think as a district about the importance of school safety, I wanted to just see what the trend line looked like. And it's interesting that we really have stepped up our game in the last 5 years, because in 2013, we only had 493 cameras in our district. So we have over doubled that number, and each and every building has multiple cameras, both external to monitor parking lots and other common areas, and then of course internal to the buildings. In addition to the technology in our buildings, we also provide 8 full-time police officers who serve as school resource officers for our district. So we have 1 full-time officer at each of our 5 comprehensive high schools. We also have a full-time officer that is shared between Central Campus and also Central Academy. And then we have 2 full-time officers that rotate throughout our 11 middle schools. In addition to that, we supplement that with 11 full-time patrol officers for district security who are constantly patrolling the exterior of buildings, checking locks in the evening, and doing all of the extra stuff that happens at the end of the school day. Security is very important to us, and we have really attempted in every way to not only invest the dollars necessary to address the significant security challenges that exist in public schools across the country, but to really step up our game so that we are not only providing a safe and secure environment for our students, but one that is welcoming as well. We don't have metal detectors in our buildings. We just have decided that we don't need to go to that level. There may come a point when we do believe that that's important, but at this point, we just don't think that that is what's required in Des Moines Public Schools. So the next issue that I want to just talk about that is top of mind, and especially when I woke up today to the continuing concerns and struggles about reuniting parents with their children who are detained in camps, is the issue of DACA, ICE, and Donald Trump. So I don't know if everybody knows this, but in 1982, the Supreme Court ruled that it was unconstitutional to deny a free public education to children who are not legally admitted to the United States. So as a public school district, we have an obligation and a requirement under the law to actually educate any and every student that comes through our doors, no matter their background, no matter their circumstance, no matter their country of origin. Not only does that not matter to us, we don't even ask. When they come to enroll into Des Moines Public Schools, we offer them a safe place to get an education and a way to not only develop the skills necessary to move into the next stage of their lives, but to really thrive and grow in what we believe to be is important to achieve the American dream. So on February 7th of 2017, our board unanimously approved two resolutions in support of immigrant and refugee students. The first of those was to establish our district as a sanctuary district, even amidst all of the threats from Congressman King to take away our funding. We did it anyway. And it was interesting because we had a lot of people that supported us, but I have to admit that I also got many, many threatening phone calls, many, many threatening emails, and individuals who, at least two, actually showed up at my job challenging the sanctuary resolution that our board had advanced. And as far as I'm concerned, we had not only the right to do that, but we had an obligation to do that, especially given the diversity of students that we serve in our district. The resolution went even further to establish a series of protocols that district staff and administrators would actually be responsible for implementing should ICE ever show up on school grounds, inquire about information on students, parents, or other individuals that were engaged in the district. We've not had a situation where we've had to actually enact that yet. But what I would say is that to the extent that ICE were to show up tomorrow, every single member of our staff, every teacher in our building, and every administrator understands exactly what their obligations are under the law, but more importantly, exactly what their obligations are based on board protocol and also the resolution that we've passed. That's my 15 minutes, so I've got five more. I said it for 15. The other thing that we did was to remind ourselves how important Dreamers are to this community and to this country. Under the Obama administration, we provided safe harbor for students to be able to be in this country, whether they were documented or not, and to be able to live out the dream that they had when they decided they wanted to come to this country with family members or others. To put this action into context, approximately 4,000 Des Moines Public School students were actually born outside of the United States. So of the 33,000 students that we serve, over 10% were actually born outside of the United States, and many of them obviously are considered Dreamers. We also currently, when President Trump actually enacted his ban, his travel ban, of the countries that were included in that travel ban, we actually had over 250 students already in the district whose countries were included in that travel ban. So if family members wanted to reunite with those students, or if there was a need for those students to actually need to travel back to be with family members in the case of a death or some other unfortunate emergency, it's likely that those students would not be readmitted back into this country. So we thought it was important as a board that we just step out and really sort of put our stake in the ground and take a stand on those issues. And I'm very proud of not only the stand that we took, but the timing of it. And when other people were shying away from this notion of being a sanctuary, a safe place, Des Moines Public Schools stepped up and did the right thing. And I'm just extremely proud of our work, not only as it relates to our immigrant populations, but also the stand that we took relative to them. Very quickly, challenges. So, budget is a big one, and I'm looking back at Senator, soon-to-be Supervisor McCoy. Des Moines Public Schools has a $500 million budget. We have an outdated state funding formula that is really not keeping pace with the ability for us to do the work that we do each and every day. 80% of our costs in the district are for personal services. We have four bargaining units within the district, and we negotiate contracts typically every year or every 2 years. Those contracts typically come in at about 2 to 3%, somewhere in that range, and state aid is only increasing at 1%, oftentimes less than that. So we're actually outpacing what the state is giving us, and this year alone, we had a $29 million budget gap that we had to fill. Next year, not only will we have that $29 million that we have to fill, but we'll probably have an additional $15 to $18 million on top of that that will create the gap that we're going to have to focus on as we move into fiscal 19-20. So the state budget formula is outdated. It needs to be revamped. And there really needs to be, in my opinion, a reinvestment in public education. Iowa used to be first in the nation in education. I think now we're about 28th or 29th. And that's sad, because I think that used to be a huge pride point for anybody who came from the state of Iowa. It doesn't mean that the level of education has decreased, because I believe that we provide quality education in Des Moines Public Schools, but I think our ability to keep pace with everything that we have to do is important when it comes to beginning to look at budget. We've also had some really unfavorable legislation when it comes to public education. Changes in Chapter 20, the collective bargaining legislation, that totally emasculated our ability to be able to do anything when it comes to negotiating contracts. There are very few things that we can actually negotiate, and everything else literally is off the table. As a district, we decided to try to get ahead of that legislation, so we preemptively extended the existing contracts that we had for all of our bargaining units so that we had an opportunity to sort of figure out what the impact of changes in Chapter 20 would be for us. And so the thing that was really great is we actually bought another 2 years so that we could adjust to the changes in Chapter 20, hoping that there may be a change in the legislature, thank you, Chad, for running, that might give us an opportunity to really turn the tide and hopefully shift gears when it comes to Chapter 20 and sort of rethink that whole approach. The other thing that I think is really important is that we've also had a really big push for vouchers in this state. And I don't know if everybody understands what vouchers are, but it really takes dollars away from public education and provides the same dollar amount to students who want to attend public school, for students who are homeschooled, or for students who want to do online education. Every dime that's taken away from our district means that that's a dime less that we have to educate the 33,000 students we have in our district. So those vouchers are really serious. Of course, we know Betsy DeVos is a huge voucher fan. Luckily, she's not been as effective at the federal level in pushing that legislation, but I think it's only a matter of time, and I think it's only a matter of time here in our state as well. Dwindling teacher pools. Boy, a lot of kids are not deciding they want to go into education, and it's unfortunate because our ability to attract teachers of quality is contingent upon people who actually want to pursue this as a career. I'm very proud that I have a son who is finishing up his teacher certification and will become a Des Moines Public Schools teacher, hopefully, in the next year. But it's very few and far between that we have students, especially men and women of color, who want to go into the teaching profession. So not only are we dealing with a dwindling number of people who are actually interested in going into the profession, but we also have a dwindling number of people of color who are interested in going into the profession. And that really has an impact on our ability to have those role models in the classroom so that students can see the possibilities of what they can be and how they can really aspire to opportunities in the people that they see in the classroom. And finally, the other challenge that I want to just lift up is educating a larger and larger number of children living in poverty and English language learners. The challenges that go along with especially educating children in poverty oftentimes create even greater needs for us from a human and social services perspective, and also a service delivery model that really meets their needs. We have great partnerships with a number of community-based organizations that are providing that out-of-school support for our students, But we've got to do more and more of that so that teachers can do what they do best, which is teach, and other people support the other needs of our students in terms of human services and other services that allow them to be ready and prepared to be taught by the amazing teachers that we have in our district. So very quickly, just a few pride points. Hoover Huskies, yay, yay, yay. State softball champs. Just had the celebration with them about a week and a half ago, and I am so proud of those young ladies. The pitcher, I don't know if you know much about her, but she just got a Division I scholarship. She's going to the University of Southern Louisiana, where hopefully she'll be pitching down there too. She's the only senior on that team, so hopefully they're going to come back for a second round of that state championship, and it's so awesome to be able to celebrate those young ladies. Merrill Middle School, they were the mock trial champions this year. Merrill has a wonderful history of producing some amazing students in the IB program there. My good friend Alex Hanna, who's been the principal there for many, many years, just retired this year, but I think he's created a legacy of not only excellence in that building, but I know we're gonna continue to see great things coming from Merrill Middle School. The district has something that I think is unique in our district, which we call the Blue Contract. It is for teachers who are first-year teachers who sign on to the district, and it's really our way of not only recruiting, but also retaining the best and the brightest. Individuals that come into the district and decide they want to be a part of the Blue Contract actually sign on to be part of a master's program that is provided free of charge to them through Drake University. It's a 2.5-year program, and they're required to participate in classes on nights and weekends during that 2-year stint. And the only thing that they are required to give back to us is a commitment of 5 years to stay with the district. So this is our attempt to not only create the right kind of culture within the teachers that we're bringing into the district, but it's also a great way of sort of growing our own leaders and administrators in the district. It's a huge investment on our part, but it's one that's already paying dividends. We see many of the people who have gone through that program moving into leadership roles in the district, so it's a great way to sort of grow our own. Another pride point that I want to mention is we are one of the few school districts of our size, not only in Iowa, but in the country, that has no general obligation debt. So I don't know if you guys know what general obligation debt is, but typically when municipalities or schools or government bodies are trying to build major facilities, they typically have to do a bond issue. They have to issue bonds to create the capital necessary to build those facilities. And the wonderful thing about Des Moines is that we have no general obligation debt. And you want to know why? Because before we had the statewide penny, we had the local option sales tax. For us, that generates about $30 million a year. And that $30 million has allowed us to build new buildings, to do enhancements to buildings, to create the necessary technology for buildings. It has really been sort of our windfall, if you will, to really do all of the things that typically other school districts are doing through the issuance of general obligation bonds. So we should be very proud that we not only have the statewide penny, but that the legislature, at least for now, has decided not to tap into that. There was a move afoot about a year ago to tap into that for water quality and a few other things, and we've been able to sort of stave that off. But it's a great windfall for us, and it's a great way for us to really continue to reinvest in our infrastructure and not have to issue general obligation bonds, which is an additional tax, if you will, on the constituents that live in our district. And finally, the only other pride point I want to just mention is that Central Campus and Central Academy are really jewels in this district's crown. There are very few districts in this country, I would say, that have the extensive technical opportunities that are provided at Central Campus and the amazing AP and International Baccalaureate Diploma program that we provide at Central Academy. So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have But it's a wonderful opportunity just to come and just share a little bit about our district and really lift up the amazing things that we do each and every day in Des Moines Public Schools. It's probably the joy of my life to have been associated with this district for as long as I have, not only having educated both my children in the district, but also having responsibility for probably during my tenure educating, gosh, close to 750,000 students during my tenure as a member of the Des Moines Public School Board. It's important work. We don't get paid for it, but that's okay. I do it anyway. So. Arming teachers, something that we're not interested in doing. I think that that's not the right move. Now, there could be a board that comes along that thinks that that's appropriate. I don't believe that the current board would even think about that for even a second. Just not feasible. Yes?
What's gone wrong with the state allocation formula, and what changes would you like to see in it?
Yeah, so first of all, it's outdated. It's been around since the beginning of time. There are a couple of things that I would say probably need to be addressed. Outside of the increases that we are or aren't getting from the legislature, they have a lot of caveats relative to categorical funding. So typically, when you are in an organization, you have the ability to sort of use funds in ways that build out a very strong financial platform for the organization. In school funding, public education funding, we have silos. And that money stays in those silos. And while you may build up a fairly significant reserve here, it can't be used anywhere else in the district. So we have several funds that we're able to leverage against the penny sales tax. So we have the physical plant and equipment levy, PEBL, that we can use to leverage against the penny sales tax, and several others. But typically, the greatest challenge is the categorical funding just does not allow you the flexibility to use those dollars where it needs to be used. So again, just rethinking the formula, but also eliminating all the categories of funding and giving you greater flexibility to use it across the district in ways that make sense. Yes?
Maybe you can comment a little bit. It seems like we have a lot of young people who are coming from families with lesser incomes.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I had the opportunity to listen to was when you was into Crossroads.
Oh, sure.
Your comment for in regards to the income disparities between the Black community, mm-hmm. minority groups, and the rest of Polk County.
Mm-hmm.
Could you kind of maybe combine those two aspects a little bit for me?
Sure, I'd be happy to. He's referring to a project that I've been working on for a couple of years called One Economy. And it really is focusing on the racial wealth divide that exists between majority and minority individuals right here in Des Moines. And the disparities are incredible across a variety of different platforms. So I think everyone would agree that education can be the great equalizer. And I think a lot of what we're seeing when it comes to economic disparities that exist is the lack of education. Students who are not graduating from high school, students who are not pursuing their HISET. And so there is data out there that says that individuals who have high school or greater earn exponentially more than those that don't. And so one of the big pushes in our district, and actually that probably is a pride point I should have mentioned, our graduation rates are increasing each and every year. I think this year we were at about 91 or 92%, up from about 78% about 6 or 7 years ago. But I think if we can get more and more kids to graduate and get them on some sort of career path or career track, utilizing Central Academy, our technical programs, all of those things, we can have a greater impact on addressing those disparities in income that exist. I just really believe that education is the great equalizer, and the better we are at educating our students and preparing them for their futures, the less those gaps exist in our community relative to the economic disparities that we have. Is there a question over here? Yes.
Yes. I spent 3 decades teaching at Des Moines Public Schools.
Yes.
In my first contract in 1972, I chose to be in the Des Moines Teachers Retirement System.
Yes.
I want to continue being in the Des Moines Teachers Retirement System. I don't want any part of my years.
Well, I appreciate that comment. And you're probably not the only one that feels that way based on the number of emails that have flooded my inbox over the course of the last probably year and a half or so as we've been working on this. The challenge is, and I'm probably not going to give you an answer that you're going to like or one that you're going to agree with, but this is my position and I'm sticking to it. Des Moines does not need to be in the business of running a retirement system. I think that is really what predicated the move to divorce ourselves from DMTRS and to create stronger alliances with IPERS. The more and more people that are coming into the system now obviously are moving to IPERS. We have probably 230 individuals, if I'm not mistaken, that are still part of the old DMTRS. Part of the challenge right now, and we actually, I think, have an action on our agenda coming up in another week or so, is to address the issue of the retained earnings, which accrue each and every year, that are then distributed to individuals who are part of DMTRS. I think really the rub right now is the fact that it has taken so long to consummate the transfer and to move to the full marriage with IPERS that people really believe that, number one, it's not going to happen, but it is going to happen, I would imagine, probably within the next 6 to 8 months. And then number two, that we're eating into the reserves of DMTRS. We've had actuary after actuary after actuary who has come in and done analysis. And I am not an actuary myself. I have to rely on the expertise of the individuals that we've brought in to do that work. But what I would tell you is that I applaud Roger Hudson and whoever started DMTRS many, many years ago. We are at a point now where a single system for a district of our size is what we need, and we are moving in that direction. So I'm sorry that that's probably not the answer that you want, but that is the position that I've taken on the issue, and I'd be less than transparent if I tried to sell you a line of bull this morning, because I'm not going to do that. Other questions? Yes. Sure, and I didn't bring those documents with me, but we have a system that allows students to either open enroll out of the district or open enroll to the district. And the numbers that I believe came in indicated that this year we had a net of about 1,200 students that open enrolled out of the district and about 815 that open enrolled into the district. Now, there was a time when those numbers were demonstrably different. We're definitely closing the gap, and a couple of things that we're doing to address that are the development of our own online course. We have a lot of people who want to open enroll out so that they can do what they consider to be free online. Well, free is not free, because every person that goes to online classes, that 6,000 that's coming to our district is actually paid to those online services. So we're developing our own online system so that we can respond to people who are interested in that. The other thing that's happening, though, quite frankly, is we also have a number of students who open enroll, in addition to those 800, to participate in Central Academy or Central Campus. We have a lot of districts who are now precluding their students from coming to Des Moines Public Schools to take advantage of that, which is really sort of sad. They're trying to replicate what we're doing in other districts, and that really just doesn't make sense in times where the financial straits are where they are right now. But I think that we are definitely closing the gap on open enrollment. It used to be much, much larger, but I think we're trying to be as responsive as we possibly can. One of the things that happened during this legislative session was that there was a move to eliminate diversity plans. Now, diversity plans in districts really set out how we create an equitable platform for serving the needs of our students, no matter their race, their background, their socioeconomic status, et cetera. and the state legislature was attempting to eliminate diversity plans. The diversity plan is what drives the formula for how we determine whether or not a student can open enroll out of the district, a student can open enroll into the district, or a student can do an in-district transfer. Very complicated, but the long and the short of it is that had the legislature allowed those diversity plans to be eliminated, we would have had a mass exodus from our district, people going other places where they think they're going to get a better education and a higher quality education. It's happening in cities throughout the country. If you look at some of the larger major metropolitan areas, because of vouchers and lack of diversity plans, there is a mass exodus from urban districts. That cannot happen in Des Moines. If it does, it will decimate our district. So hopefully that answers your question.
Thank you.
Great, thank you.
Thank you, Terry. And it's a tradition to give a token of appreciation to our speakers. This is a recording of the Des Moines Gay Men's Chorus that you will enjoy. I served on the school board for a number of years as well, as you know. And she's correct. Iowa used to be number one in public education. That's back when I was on the school board. any number of times I've been asked, are you sorry that you're not still on the school board and have to deal with all these problems? And my standard response is, if I hadn't lost that election, we wouldn't have all these problems. it's also an interesting fact that there are something like 16 school districts that serve parts of Polk County. Any one of the superintendents of any one of those school districts could handle the whole thing. If we had the ability and the intelligence that people in Miami-Dade County do, for example, to work with a larger school district and save some money. And on the topic of arming teachers, I can remember being really scared of unarmed librarians. Imagine arming the librarians, probably equipped with a silencer, of course. But. Terry brings a couple of really important skills to our Des Moines public school system. Board members have two important responsibilities. Number one is to work with other board members to get something done. I used to say that on a board of seven, you don't have to be very smart to succeed. You have to be able to count to four. If you can get to four, you can do things. If you can't, you can't. And Terry has that skill set that she brings to the board to work with other board members to do things. The other important skill set is calming parents down. Over and over you'd hear, Johnny didn't do it. Response, we have it on video. And without breaking anything, the parent says, well, it wasn't his fault. They shift that quickly, and you're messing with people's children. Therefore, you are surrounded by mother bears throughout the district who are looking out for their kids and giving you a hard time. And this woman is really articulate in speaking to the issues of public education and what we're doing and why. And that's an important skill. All right. With that, I want to invite all of you to come back again on September the 7th. Our speaker will be Brad Clark, the executive director of the Gill Foundation. Then in October, on the 5th of October, we'll have Sam Brinton. He is involved in the effort across the nation to get legislation in all of the states that will prohibit conversion therapy as a part of the offerings of the psychological community. He's also with the Trevor Project, so that's October. The very last thing is to remind you that Taylor Vanderkroll is running for the Senate, and he needs support. You don't have to live in his district to vote for him. If you give money or you volunteer, you turn out votes, and it's the same thing as if you were there voting for him. He can use your help, and you've got a basket here that could use some funds, and I'm going to contribute this morning as well. Thank you all again for being here. We really appreciate it. See you in September.